Live from the library, we talk RSS feeds, RSS readers, and more. This time on Technology IQ. This is Technology IQ with Douglas E. Welch. For more information, visit our website, welchwrite.com/tech IQ. That's welchwrite.com/tech IQ. Send your technology questions and comments to techiq@welchwrite.com.
Well, good evening, everyone. Here we are back at the library again for our internet seminars. These are the twice monthly seminars we do here at the library. For those of you who are new, I am Douglas Welch. I'm a volunteer here at the library. I've been doing classes here at the library for about 12 to 15 years. I actually don't know exactly. It was long before this library was rebuilt. These series of seminars, I call them, because we don't have hands-on here at the library, but these series of seminars are about internet services mainly. That's what we're focusing on for this group of classes. And these are services that you can use either at your own computer at home or at the computers here at the library. Now, I will show you a few things over our time together that won't work here at the library, but I'll always clearly tell you which ones won't work, basically. Now, homage to our weather today, I was feeling that it was a
Now, on this blustery day, he decided to visit his thoughtful spot.
Yes, and on the way, I made up a little hum, and it hummed something like this. Hum-dum-dum-diddy-dum, hum-dum-dum.
I was very much feeling like Winnie the Pooh today, and it was a very, very...
Disney.go.com.
Now, honestly, what I did to find that is I actually just did a Google search for Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day, and it came up with this clip. But I figured that was a good way to start our class today. It's been very windy here. For those of you listening on the stream, it's been a very windy day here in Los Angeles. And in fact, my power went out about 12:30 today and was not on when we left to go to my son's ball game about 4 o'clock. So they were predicting about 6 o'clock before our power was going to be restored. So just to give you some indication there. Well, that's a little bit of fun, kind of out of the way first thing here tonight. What I wanted to talk about, we touched on this lightly last session, and the people seem interested in it, and so I wanted to come back to it and actually spend a little more time with it. And that topic was RSS feeds, okay? And what RSS stands for is Real Simple Syndication, okay? Now, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. I will say the concept of RSS, when you're first getting introduced to it, can be a little bit confusing, but the power involved in using RSS is amazing. It will allow you to basically bring information to your computer automatically without any further input on your part. So it's basically like having, if you want to think of the old days where there were newspaper clipping companies and you could hire them, they would clip out clippings for you that were somehow related to your company or you personally and then send you those clippings. Well, think of RSS in the same way. What an RSS feed is a text file. It's just a normal text file. It's something like you would do with a word processor or any type of other program, except that it's what I call machine readable. It's really not designed to be read by human beings. We can look at it, and someone like me, I can go through, and there's a lot of text in there, and you can kind of figure out what's going on in the file. But in fact, it's filled with these little codes that tell a computer piece of computer software what to do with this information when it looks at it. The example I came up with for RSS feeds today was, imagine a newspaper. Imagine the LA Times arrives on your doorstep in the morning, and you're reading it, and then you lay it down for a few minutes or an hour, and when you come back, you notice the stories have changed. And you read those new stories. And here's our announcement for our class tonight. I always start a little bit before they get the announcement in. So imagine that you go back another hour later, and there's new stories in there. And some of the old stories have rolled off. imagine that that newspaper didn't just have the stories that the editors thought were interesting or important. Imagine that newspaper knew what your interests were and knew that the information about a neighborhood council meeting was perhaps more important to you than a national story that happened somewhere clear across the country. And it would highlight those stories and put them at the top. That is the power of RSS. In one particular way, you can develop a customized set of information based around your interests that automatically shows up on your computer. Now, there are several ways of using these RSS feeds. Now, first of all, you probably have gone, if you've been on the internet at all, you've come across lots and lots of RSS feeds, but you may not have realized it. But one of the things to look for, as soon as my blog page loads here, is up, say, up here in the right-hand corner, see where it says subscribe to my word and subscribe, and see where it says over here, see this little orange icon that you see there kind of looks like a little speaker shooting out waves? That's become kind of the standard icon to denote an RSS feed. Okay? So what you can do is, since I support that on my site, you can actually use that feed, subscribe to this particular blog on my website, and your RSS feeder would notify you anytime I put something new out in this particular blog. Okay, so that's one of the ways you can use RSS, is to monitor a particular website, a particular part of a website, a particular web log, which is, by the way, what blog is short for, is web log. You can also use it to monitor other items. For example, up here in my tabs, I've gone to Flickr.com. It's Flickr.com. Flickr is a photo sharing website. It's a place that allows you to upload your photos, tag them with various keywords, put them in various groups, and anyone else out there in the world can actually come and look at your photos. Now, one of the interesting things you can do, too, is every user and every group on Flickr has an RSS feed that you can monitor. So, for example, say you wanted to watch whatever photos I'm putting up. Now, I'm not saying I'm that important, but if, say, you wanted to, say it was a family member, for example, who wanted to see whenever I put a photo up on Flickr, they would automatically get notice of that in their RSS feed reader. Well, if you scroll down to the bottom of this page, you're going to come across that little icon again. See that right there?
Oh, yeah.
And it says feed, and it says subscribe to DE Welch's Photos. So I could use that link to actually set up my system to monitor any photo I put up there. Now, another very powerful feature of Flickr is that you can send your photos, your individual photos, into a group. And there's one group called Gardening for Fun that I like, which is all just gardening photos. Well, guess which RSS feed I watch on my computer? I've gone to the Gardening for Fun group, and I've said, I want to know when anybody posts anything new in the Gardening for Fun group. And then I get it on my computer, and I can browse through them. And that happens every hour, every day, every week, whatever you set it up to do. Okay? So those are some examples of things you can bring to your computer automatically. Now, the point being then is, yes, ma'am?
Oh, I just noticed this is in Flickr, but it's your personal. It's telling you what you personally belong to?
Yes, these are my groups.
Those are yours.
Two groups that I administer, and then seven groups that I belong to. Part of Flickr and a lot of sites on the internet is that sociability, that sharing of information. And so these groups actually have text discussion groups associated with them as well, where you can actually also, on any photo on Flickr, you can actually comment on someone else's photo.
Yes.
And you can actually favorite other people's photos. And when someone favorites one of my photos, I get a little ping that says, hey, someone favorited your photo, or someone commented on your photo. And I can go back and look, and then I can reply to them. So it's kind of a social, it's like sitting around a table with photos and sharing them with people. So now hopefully you've seen some examples of where these RSS feeds live, right?
So you just have, so if you're on a site that you like, mm-hmm. you want to look around.
Look around for something that says subscribe, or that little orange icon, or something like that, or the term RSS feed, or feed just by itself.
So am I doing that that when I subscribe to, like, there's a craft person that I really like and she sends out a newsletter? Is that basically the same? No.
That's probably an email newsletter that you've signed up to. RSS is different in that RSS is something you have to go out and say, I want to receive that. I want to monitor that. And it's right. It's some change that appeared on a website. A email newsletter is usually something you send them. You know, you send in your name, and then every so often you get an email from the person saying, "Hey, here's my monthly newsletter." I do a monthly newsletter, and in fact, if you would like it, you can put your email address on the sign-in sheet, and I'll send an invite to add you to the list.
Is that flickr.com?
Flickr.com. F-L-I-C-K-R, no E, .com.
I got an R there.
Yeah, they use that funky name so they could trademark it.
That's what I'm learning.
Yeah. So, we've seen some examples of where these RSS feeds live out there on the internet. Okay, well, how do you use them? Okay, now there's a variety of ways. Just like back in the old days, email, if you wanted to get email, you had to have a program that ran on your computer that reached out, downloaded your email, and showed it to you, right? Well, then we got webmail services like Hotmail and Yahoo Mail and Google Mail and all these other things that actually just run right in a web browser. Well, one of the easiest ways to get started with RSS feeds, and in some cases you may find that this is all you need, is a web-based RSS reader. Okay? These are programs that allow you to subscribe to various RSS feeds, and they collect all these feeds in one place where you can quickly browse through them and see if there's anything interesting in there that you want to read. Okay? One of the first ones I'm going to show you tonight is, I don't want to overdose on Google, but Google has a reader, and it is at reader.google.com. And just like all the other Google services, it runs right here in my web browser. I don't need any additional software on my computer or anything. Now, when I go to Google Reader, I may have to set up a Google account. If you haven't set up a Google account yet, it'll ask you to do that. It's free. You step through, and then you end up with a Google account, and then you can log in. It does that mainly so it knows who you are when you come back and what feeds you've subscribed to and what information you want to get. Okay? So this is the basic entry point to Google Reader. Now, the most important thing for us is, you notice I really don't have any subscriptions over here on the left-hand side of my screen, but I do have a button that says Add Subscription. See it there? Now, if I click that button, I can enter a couple of things in this box. If I happen to know the address of an RSS feed, I can merely type it or paste it into this box. So, for example, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come back over here to Flickr real quick. I'm going to go to My Photos, and I'm going to grab that feed from my Flickr page down here at the bottom, right? There it is. So now, one of the easiest ways to just grab that feed is you can right-click on it. Does anyone have a Mac? Is anyone using Mac? If you don't have a two-button mouse, whenever I say right-click, translate in your mind to Control-click. Hold down Control, it'll do the exact same thing. If you have a two-button mouse, it'll just work the same way. When I hit the right-click, one of the options I get is Copy Link Location. Do you see that? What it's going to do is going to suck the address out of that link that I clicked on, and now it's on the clipboard waiting for me to do something to it. So I go back to Google Reader. That my little ad subscription box is still open there, right? I then right-click and say Paste. Look at that. Look at that address. You would never want to try to type in that address. You see how long it is. Okay, right. But by using the copy and paste, it becomes very easy for us.
Right,
yeah. Then I click the Add button. And if everything out there on the internet's working, Google Reader has now reached out to Flickr and said, Flickr, please show me the feed of all photos for this user on your site. And sure enough, right here in the right-hand pane you saw pop up almost immediately, here is the photos from my Flickr feed. So you can watch me, you can watch anybody else on Flickr who shares their photos on Flickr, you can watch a group like the Gardening for Fun group, and it will just show up in your reader. Now what happens is Google checks, basically whenever you return to the Google Reader, it goes out and it updates all the feeds you're subscribed to. So along the left we're starting to see the subscriptions. So we got the first subscription there. There's DE Welch Photos. Now, let's add another one. And this one I'm just going to type in because guess what? I happen to know what it is, and that's for my Technology IQ blog, the one I publicize the internet seminars in and stuff like that. So I happen to know it's feeds.feedburner.com/techIQ. I use it every day, so I happen to know what it is. I click Add, and now I'm watching the Technology IQ blog, and anytime I put something new in there, it's going to show up in bold and with the number. Basically, when one of the names of the subscriptions is bolded, it means there's new stuff in there you have not seen before. And the number is how many items are in there. So if I click on Technology IQ now, boom, on my right-hand pane, I see the newest item, and I can scroll down. Now, you can do some interesting things here. Let me see if I can. I don't use Google Reader as my full-time reader. That's what I wanted. I wanted the list view here. If we're in the list view, you see there's three little tabs up here at the top, feed settings, expanded and list view. That sort of looks like an email inbox, doesn't it? Where you've got the subject lines listed. Well, what I find is this is how often I read my RSS feeds, is I just look at the subject lines, and I go through them and say, anything interesting? Ooh, bird watching, what's that about? And I can click on it. When I clicked on it, it took me to the full item for that particular subject line. Then I can go back, and I can move down through my list. Now, what you'll notice if you watch me reading RSS feeds, you'll notice I'm not reading everything. I call it browsing. It's like what you do when you flip through a magazine. Oftentimes, the first time I get a magazine, the first thing I do is I don't read it. I just kind of flip through it and see what might be interesting in there. Reading RSS feeds is very much the same way. Someone once described it as dipping your toe in a moving river. It's kind of, you kind of dip in, you see what's there of interest, and when you step away, you don't really care what flows by when you're not watching, because the fact is, if it's important to you, if it's interesting to you, it's going to come around again. You're going to find it anyway. Oftentimes, when I show RSS feeds to people, they get a little stressed. It's like, that's too much information. I can't. It's like a fire hose. I can't deal with it. The point being, you don't have to deal with everything in here. What it's doing is it's presenting information to you in such a way that you can browse through it like you would flip through a magazine, finding those things that interested you most. Like, here's one of the particular photos from my Flickr account. And then when you're done, see this button at the top of the list here that says Mark All as Read? That is your favorite buddy when it comes to RSS feeds. Because once you've glanced through the list of subjects and you said, okay, I've pretty much seen everything in there that I want to see, I click Mark as Read. And now, notice D.E. Welch's photo. See how it's not bolded anymore? There's no number after it? There's nothing new in there. And there won't be anything new there until Google Reader checks again, and if I posted something new there.
Will those still be there, though? Are those going into what's showing up right now?
What'll happen is these will slide, the right side, those subjects will slide down, and the new stuff will in bold at the top.
Okay.
So if I go to Technology IQ, you see there are two new items here. And then if I mark all those red, boom, now they're all marked as read. Yes, ma'am?
When you get your reader so full, did you go through and delete certain items?
What? No, in fact, that's a great reason for using an online reader like this is, and with any RSS reader, stuff rolls off as it gets old. It only keeps so much, because basically you're focused on the new stuff that's come in. And so as the older stuff comes down, it eventually rolls off the bottom and off your machine.
Can you keep that, like if there was some article there?
See the little stars?
Yes.
We had a question, is can you keep an item that you're interested in? The little stars are, they call them starred items. And starred items will remain, and it stashes them over here. See the little button over here that says starred items?
Oh, yeah.
It'll retain those items in that starred item.
Can you send that? Can you email an article to you?
I am sure you can. Once more, yeah. Down here at the, when I clicked on an item and it opened up, down here at the bottom says add star, share, email, add tags.
Okay.
Again, I have to proclaim a little bit of ignorance about Google Readers because I don't use it full time. You know, I don't know everything either. I sometimes I try to tell people that is, you know, I don't know everything either, please. Yes, ma'am. Add tags allows you to basically add, tags are descriptive terms about that particular post. say this is about a Office application. So I would say I would tag this with the words Office, software, online, web-based, whatever keywords made sense to me. And what happens, it'll start to create a database of these keywords. So you can say, oh, I came across something. It was about ham radio. I'm just picking one on the air. And you could go to your list of tags and say, show me everything that I tagged with ham radio. And I'm going to go, now, you'll also notice, you'll see, that's a good question, because you'll see these things called tags in other systems and other programs as well. In fact, Flickr has the ability to tag any photo. So, for example, these photos here you're seeing with the people in them are from Bar Camp LA. This is a kind of ad hoc organized conference that we do about every 6 months. One of the things we always make sure we do is when we put up a photo from Bar Camp LA, we tag it with the word, Bar Camp LA, all one word. And then I can actually monitor that feed. And so when anybody else at the conference uploads a photo to Flickr with the tag Bar Camp LA, I'll see it. And I can monitor the RSS feed for that as well, so it automatically just shows up in my reader. You can do the same thing. You can also say, I like flowers. And you could just say, Flickr, subscribe to the feed of flowers from Flickr. Then you would just see a list. Just like we saw in Google Reader, you'd see a list of all these pictures that are tagged with the word flower. So that's what tagging is. And it's available in lots of different venues now. It's kind of taking over the web world. What do they call it? They call it a folksonomy, like a taxonomy. But a folksonomy is user-generated. You don't have some taxonomic expert sitting there like they do with plants and animals and stuff and say, well, that's in this genus and this species. What we found is, in fact, there's a whole book on this called The Wisdom of Crowds. But what we found is if you get enough people together, the tags will start to classify this information automatically just from the efforts of each individual tagging their stuff. So it's not perfect, not meant to be perfect, but it does offer a way of classifying huge amounts of information by using everyone's hands, basically.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
If I were there, where would I go if I wanted to tag
Well, only I can tag my pictures.
Oh, only you can tag.
Because they belong to me. But if you upload a picture, you can tag them whatever you wish. I'm going to take you into the detail page for one of the pictures here on Flickr.
That's where it is.
So here's the detail page, okay? And I have various things up here. Now, on the right-hand side, you'll see where it says tags over here.
Oh, okay.
And these are the tags I put on the photo, and there's add a tag. And you see it's tagged with blue, wall, fence, nail, and photo a day. Because I'm trying to do a thing where I take a photo a day and that gets posted to Flickr. In fact, if you watch my blog called My Word, that's where all my photos a day appear as blog posts in that blog. By tagging it photo a day here, I can actually on Flickr go in and say, Flickr, show me all my photos a day. And it will suck out all of them. And I could also say, show me anyone's pictures labeled with the tag photo a day or picture a day. So I could see anyone else who's engaged in the same sort of exercise that I'm in. I could actually watch their photos as well.
So you actually have time to take a picture a day?
I don't always make it.
Oh.
It's a goal of mine, but yeah, there are days I don't make it. It just happens. But to me, the importance is in trying. Because at the end of this year, I'm going to have a pretty wide-ranging collection of kind of my life over the last year with, one photo a day. So it's a neat project. I learned about that product over at a photography website called photojojo.com. PHOTOJOJO.com. They had an article on the idea of taking a photo day. One, for someone who's interested in photography, it's like doing an exercise a day.
You just
go through your day with the thought in your head, oh, I'm going to take a picture somewhere today. That's going to be my photo of the day. And, any good photographer will tell you, if you want to become a great photographer, always carry your camera with you. Always.
Do you know that I did that same thing with just a little tiny digital? I have to say, we went took the train, the Metrolink down to Union Station. And, I came back and I didn't take one picture, and I thought, well, you idiot.
Man, don't beat yourself up. The whole point is nothing grabbed you. But, I mean, this picture that I have up here on the screen, and I can actually blow it up a little bit bigger here, I was at the ball field with my son. He's in Little League. In fact, he's at a game right now. I'm actually missing his game. But actually, it's over by now, I guess. But this is just a fence. at the ball field on the backstop where the galvanized fencing meets the wooden backstop. And I was sitting there in my chair watching the game, and I kind of looked over and went, that's sort of neat.
Yeah.
I sort of like that. If you look at my photos, you'll notice that I'm into close-ups. I really like working almost macro photography. Because someone once told me, it is true, the best photos are close photos. The photo we take where we're standing over here and go, okay, click, there's the family snapshot, doesn't have a lot of power. It's when you really get close to something or close to a person that you start to get the personality. You get more detail. Obviously, there's just more information there because you're closer, it's sharper, and so on. And so I tend to work close a lot. Here's a picture I did of some flowers in my garden. Actually, I can't take credit. These are not in my garden. These are in my neighborhood. Every year they come up, and I end up taking a picture of them almost every year. But this was like reaching down here, you know, about this level, because they're only about this high, and kind of watching the screen and, you know, popping off a photo, kind of worm's eye view. But I think it actually ended up with a fairly dramatic picture. You got the, you know, just the whole mass of it ended up being very sharp and stuff. So back to Google Reader real quick. You can continue adding subscriptions and adding subscriptions. I personally have about 250 individual subscriptions in my news reader. And I can actually show you that because I have a program that actually runs in my Macintosh at home. And if you have a Mac, I highly recommend NetNewsWire. Okay? NetNewsWire is a pay program. It's fairly inexpensive, but boy is it good. They actually have a free version you can try out. It actually doesn't expire. It has fewer features. It's called NetNewsWire Lite. So if you've got a Mac, I highly recommend that. It ties in with this online site called NewsGator. And what happens is if I read something here and mark it as read, when next time my computer at home checks, it actually will know that I marked it as read. So I use the NewsGator site when I'm out and about, like at class or at a coffee bar or something like that, and I want to check up on stuff. If you look on the left, you'll see how many feeds. I would see 414 feeds is what I have in there right now. And what I've also done here, and you can sort of see it, is I've divided them into subgroups. See the little folder icons? So art and creativity, if I open that up, you'll see there's actually six different feeds that I'm monitoring in my category, art and creativity. And so I've kind of added a second layer of classification on top of it. You'll see the new counts, you know, next to it. There's two new ones in that one, one new gardening. Here's gardening. There's 10 new items in there, and it brings them up. And here's the 10 items. And what NewsGator does is give me the subject line and a little more information, usually the first couple of lines of the individual item.
But paid for that?
No, NewsGator is free. But it does tie into this other piece of software. So I actually never had used it until I bought NetNewsWire and said, that's sort of interesting. So I started using it more. But I just wanted to show you how many feeds I'm monitoring. There's gardening feeds. There's Los Angeles feeds. There are so many great Los Angeles locally focused blogs out there right now that if you want information on the city, almost before I turn on the local news, I will go to my blogs. One of the first things I do every morning is I go to my Los Angeles blog and say, what's going on in the city? What happened last night? What's happening this morning? There was a fire in Franklin Canyon today. I actually found out about it first via my news feeds, you know, because I wasn't in the car. When I got in the car, I turned on KFWB and I got the information there. But I first heard about it right here in my LA blogs. I highly recommend them. There's a bunch of great ones. You'll find some that you like, some that you don't. What's happening now is we're getting people who are doing specific blogs about specific neighborhoods. The latest one I just saw is Tahunga Village. There's a person in Tahunga Village who's kind of focusing on that neighborhood now. There's three or four of us in Van Nuys. I don't consider myself a city blogger, and I don't focus, you know, totally on the city. The other guys are a little more. One is called Here in Van Nuys, and the other one's called Come and Feel the Noise. There's a Malibu blogger, there's an Eagle Rock blogger, and we're just getting at least one person in almost all the neighborhoods of Los Angeles. So if you're interested in a particular area or you live in a particular area, there's this kind of local news, which personally I crave. The one thing that's missing a lot from the LA Times newspaper for myself is that local news. You know, great, I guess I want to know what's happening in Iraq, but I also want to know what the fire was two blocks away last night and what went on. So I've really started to turn to blogs, and RSS feeds are a great way of monitoring that. Because when I get up in the morning, my newspaper's pre-built sitting here on my desktop, and I can just browse to my heart's content. And what's even nicer, I can comment on blog entries. I can say, oh yeah, that's what it was. And I can tell you, I talked to the guys afterwards and here's what I found out. And add whatever information I might have. When we had the big fire in Universal City, I think I was one of the first ones to post a photo of it on the web. But it was a long, I was way over in the 405, but I got a photo of it going home that night. But boy, just immediate information about the fire. Where was it? How did it start? What's its current status? One of the LA Fire Department's public relations staffers actually runs the fire department blog. And not only will he do his own blog, he actually will comment on other people's blogs with further information and updates, official information from the fire department. And
yeah,
it's amazing.
How do you find that blog? How do you, I know you know where to go, but how do we know where to go?
I find a lot of blogs because I read about them on blogs I'm already reading. That's the first big way. That's the first big way. So if you come to my blog, for example, you're going to find out about these other LA blogs because I will highlight things that they wrote and write my comments and say, hey, go check this out. So that's one way. The other way is you can search. You can type in Los Angeles local information, Los Angeles blogs. You can do all sorts of searches. In a lot of ways, you're going to stumble across them because someone's going to recommend them. Someone's going to, either whether it's a blog or a friend or whatever, they're going to say, hey, have you read L.A. Frog, which is a French expat living here in L.A. And I think I can't remember if he's in Santa Monica or downtown, but, you know, that's just one of the sites that I've happened across. The point is when you're out there browsing around the web, look for those RSS feeds. Now, personally, I will say, if a website does not have an RSS feed, I am really hard-pressed to read it. Because you saw 414 feeds. I can monitor those. Maybe it takes me a half hour in the morning, kind of go, you know, glance through things. If I had to visit each one of those websites, well, the fact is, I wouldn't. You wouldn't do it because it's impossible to visit that many websites in a day. Now, that was the old way the world used to be. I mean, RSS is only about 2 years, 2.5 years old, maybe a little bit longer than that. And boy, when it came out, I was like, oh, man, this makes my life a whole lot easier. I can subscribe to manufacturers, software and hardware manufacturers' feed for support information. For example, I can get every new Apple tech note that comes out the day it comes out. It just shows up. Boom, here's a tech note on this particular problem with my Mac. I can do the same thing with Microsoft. So as a technology person, that's like, oh my God, all this stuff comes to me now. And it's just, and I can glance at it and says, well, I really don't run into that problem. I really don't use that software. That's useful. I need to store that one away because I have run into that problem, for example. To just show you one last thing here, I have installed on this computer a standalone feed reader that doesn't use the web. It actually runs on your computer, much like NetNewsWire, and allows you to subscribe to things right here. Now, one of the interesting things you can do, I am running Firefox web browser on this computer. Internet Explorer will react in a slightly different way, but depending on how your computer is set up and what software you have installed, you get various actions if you just happen to click on one of these feeds. Now, in this case, with my computer set up the way it is, if I click on a feed, it gives me this nice little screen that says, subscribe to this feed using live bookmarks, which is actually basically in Firefox. They'll make a bookmark that they'll update with any new items in the feed. It's sort of RSS feed reading, but I don't find it that useful. It's a little too cumbersome for me. But if I click on that, look at the other options I get. I can put it into Feed Demon, which is the one running on this computer. I can also put it in Blog Lines, and I can also put it in Google Reader right from here. I don't have to copy and paste the address or anything. I can just say, hey, shoot that over to Google Reader, and it'll grab it and do it. Now, for example, I'm going to select Feed Demon, subscribe. And now if I go back to Feed Demon, do I see it? Did it finish it? May not have finished it. Hold on a second. Come on. You have to forgive me. I haven't done this yet before either, so I'm like, well, it was supposed to. I just installed Feed Demon, so I will say there's an air between the chair and the keyboard. I'm the air fly here. But basically, you click on that, it would add it automatically to Feed Demon, and it will show up just like we've seen the other feeds in the other areas. Well, I hope I've given you some introduction into RSS feeds and their power. Don't feel intimidated. I really have to restate. Don't feel like it's an overwhelming. Just glance at what you want. And then you'll go back and you'll see those things that really interest you, and you just mark the rest of them red. There's no reason to feel you have to read every single item. Fact is, every single item in a blog, every single item in a Flickr feed isn't going to be interesting to you. You know, so find those things you're interested in. It's designed to increase the amount of great information that you're able to absorb rather than make you feel stressed. Okay? So, yes, we're gonna, and actually, let me just say, we're going to basically move into question and answer now. That's my kind of presentation for the evening. So open it up and go for it.
My question, do they have a website you can click on that tells you about the different websites? Because what you're saying, I can, I got mine set up. I got a Dell with Windows and all that. I got a section called the Buddy section and all that. I click eBay or Google, and they got... must have 1,000 different references, like what you're talking about. You can click on or bring there. Then you've got a whole page, just say automobiles.
Right.
You know about the Chevys, 55 Chevy. They'll run it down, all the people, the service people, and everything. Almost basically what you're saying, they already pre-programmed it for you.
One of my...
You get there, or I'm lucky, or whatever, then right. I found out how to click it all over.
For me, Google is always my first stop on my search adventures. If I'm looking for a particular piece of information, Google pretty much is where I start. It's google.com, G-O-O-G-L-E.com. Now, what you're finding, too, is you might even have Google integrated into your browser up here. Lots more of them have this integrated search bar. You don't even need to go to the Google site first. You just type in the search you want up there. Let's say Los Angeles, oh, come on.
Museum.
Los Angeles Museums. Okay? Boom. I just hit return. Google does the search for me, and there you go. So, and then from here, these are all individual websites that you can go and visit. And you click one, and you know, maybe that site didn't appeal to you. Maybe it didn't have the information you want. Well, you know what? Use the back button. You go back to your list of search, choose the next one, and on and on and on. Now, you've noticed, too, Google also does a job of integrating its web mapping in with the search results. And in a little side note here, I will show you something that I posted on the Tech IQ blog a couple nights ago, which kind of ties in with Google and its mapping and everything and its local search, which is, you just reminded me here, if I scroll down here below the Internet Seminar, Google 411. Google now has a free telephone-based 411 service that you can... call into, it's an 800 number, tell it your location, and then give it something it's searching for. So here's a little thing I recorded.
411, experimental. What city and state?
Van Nuys, California.
Van Nuys, California. What business name or category?
Coffee.
Come on, want to pause? Okay. There we go.
Top 8 results. Number 1, Starbucks Coffee Cup on Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks. Select number 1. You can press 1 or say number 1.
And
coffee
if I,
roaster on Ventura Boulevard.
And if I had pressed number 1, it will actually say, do you wish to call this store? And it will actually call the store for you. Actually, I think the store actually calls you back is what happens. Hi, good evening. Yes, please, come on in. This is the Internet Seminar, twice monthly here at the library.
Oh, great. Thank you.
So that's an example of how Google is taking their maps, all the local information they've gathered up, and now they're integrating with this voice technology that basically you can call from your... That was recorded from my cell phone. You heard little that the radio waves coming out causing the microphone. But that was I just wanted to get a quick thing on that down. And so that's a good example of kind of combining all the stuff together.
Okay, that didn't cost you anything.
No, it's a 1-800 number. It's totally free.
It is a 1-800.
Yes. It is 1-800-GOOG-411 or... Okay. Where is it at? I put it on here. Right there it is. 1-800-GOOG-411 or 1-800-466-4411.
1-800-466-4411.
Google's 411 service is what it's called.
Oh.
It's Goog 411 is what they're calling
it. Free?
It's totally free. And it uses their local... There's also, in Google, there's a local search feature where you can say, confine your search to a local area. So you can do the same thing. If you if you're in Google, and to this day, I mean, I've been using the internet basically since it got released to the public, and the ability to do stuff like coffee near Sherman Oaks, California. There, boom. Okay. Now, actually, that's the same data that Google for that little audio I just played. That's the same data it's using. You can see that they're very much the same results. So the ability to do stuff like that is just like, you can say food near, restaurant near, and give a zip code or a geographic area, and it'll list it out for you. And you can click on the map, and it'll tell you to take you to Google Local, and it'll show you all those locations on the map, which I swear, one of these days, I'm going to walk from... I'm going to walk from one Starbucks to the next down Ventura Boulevard, because I don't even think it would be that long of a walk. That was my joke. You know the Starbucks are getting really thick when you can walk from one to the other without getting winded. I don't think you could finish a latte from the time it would take you to walk from one to the other. You'd end up with like six of them by the end of your day.
I'd like to see that the coffee roaster is right up there.
Yes, the coffee roaster, by the way, if you haven't been there, good coffee. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I found the super... I'm sorry.
No, when you go back to the Google front page, how do you... I don't know how to use advanced search. Was it unlucky? And
well, in most cases, in most cases, your advanced search... what I find is the basic search in Google is so good, I very rarely use the advanced search, unless I'm looking for something particular. One of the things I use it for often is finding a particular... an article from a particular year, for example, or I want to reduce the number of hits I'm getting. I can show you a few tricks just right off the top. Well, first of all, there's one right there. Anything near and a location. If you type in a location, it will show you a map with that location. If you type in, and this is a little scary one. Let's see if I do this right here. I can never remember quite the syntax on this. Let's see that. No, but if I just... let's just try the number. Well, that's actually trying to calculate, so what am I doing wrong? Let's just do... basically, if you put in something that's formatted like a phone number... oh, I realized I didn't have enough digits. That's why it didn't work. Yeah. Oh, look. It's a reverse... oh, look. That number belongs to Douglas and Roseanne Welch in Van Nuys. Wow. And in fact, if you click on the word map, it'll actually show you the map to my house.
Okay. Okay, that's too much information on the internet.
Yes, I'm in the phone book. That's why.
Oh.
Which has actually come in handy. Even in L.A., it's come in handy a couple times. We've had, like, friends in town or people who didn't have our number but really needed to get... and it's like, I just, on a whim, checked the phone book, and it's like, you were there. It's like, yeah, we're there. But that's an example. You can do reverse phone lookups. You can use it as a calculator. You can say, definition, colon, catalyst. Let's see if that comes up.
Because
I want... basically, one of the things saying is... if I say phone colon says, whatever comes after is a phone number. If I say definition colon says, define the word that comes after me. It's a little code to Google. So I said define catalyst, and boom, here's a bunch of definitions for the word catalyst. So you can use it like a dictionary.
Oh, look at that. And it's a...
well, you'll notice that Google will correct your spelling.
Yeah.
It'll say, did you really mean... and that is just wonderful, because... As a writer, I'm not a great speller. Spell check saves my butt, and my built-in home editor that I married saves the other part of it. Nothing goes out on my writing until she looks at it. I have a bad problem with dropped words. I can read a sentence 10 times and think it looks fine, and there'll be a missing word in it that I just won't see. But I can edit other people's work really well. It's because it's being mine, I guess. For example, the advanced search you ask about really is advanced. I mean, it's got everything from you have to find all the words in the phrase. You have to find this exact phrase. You have to find at least one of these words without these words. Now, without the words is actually a nice thing to do. The example I was getting, I was looking for information on the Fisher King myth, the medieval myth of the Fisher King. And, of course, when I did the search, I got all sorts of stuff about the movie, The Fisher King. And so what I did was I said, Fisher King, space, minus sign, movie. And it says, find Fisher King and then throw out anything that also contains the word movie. And sure enough, then my myth floated to the top and I was able to find it.
You just put a minus on
that, yeah, it's
how
basically
did you know to put a minus
sign? I had done research on it, but basically if you use the advanced search, that is the minus sign is without the words. That duplicates that effect in the advanced search. If I were to say Fisher King up here in with all the words and then say down here without the words movie, that would get me what I want.
How did you get there?
Yes, we go to Google, and on Google's main page, right at the actually on any of the pages, you'll see advanced search right here.
Right.
But also, if you go to the main, let me get back to the. I've typed in a lot of Google here. Even on the main page, you'll see it over here on the right hand side, very small letters, advanced search.
What's preferences then?
Google, you'll see it up here in the upper right hand corner. It actually knows who I am, Douglas Walter, and it says sign out. I've actually created a Google account, and Google actually remembers every search I do.
Oh,
so if I want to go back and duplicate a search, I can go back and actually look back at everything I searched on. Where do you find... Oh, it's not all the websites I've been to. It's all the searches I've done in Google.
All the searches, where do you find them?
Personalized home? Yeah, I think basically once you create an account, it gives you your own personalized space on Google, and then it retains that list in there. Now, and if you use, Google has some software that you can actually download and install on your computer called Google Desktop and the Google Toolbar, which actually use that same information to actually bring it right down to your computer as well.
Was that previous page ornamented, Google ornamented to do that?
Or previous page.
Previous page, if you went back one.
Here. The Google, as a fun thing that they do, on special days. Oh, today's Yuri Gagarin Day, that's why. So... Today, they ornament their logo with the holiday. So today's Yuri Gagarin Day, first man in space, and then if you click on the new on the logo, it'll actually take you to a search about that particular event or person.
Do you know a lot of people don't know that?
Well, now all of you do. See, okay, and let me say something here. I haven't said this in the previous meetings. Let me say this. Your job is to take what you find here and share it. Because other people do need to know this. Other people do need to know the power that's in Google, the power that's in RSS feeds, all these other things, because it's in those ways that people actually can actually do something creative with their computer. And that's always my goal. In my personal consulting, in the classes I give, everything, it's all about having fun with the computer. And to me, if you're being productive, you're having fun with it.
Other than that, wanting to throw it against the wall.
Well, and I spend a lot of time with people. If, you know, I was at a site fixing a printer today. Yeah, fixing a printer today, and it's like, you know, I would much rather be showing them, for example, that we did at the end of the call, which was show them how to get their digital pictures into iPhoto and then email them to their family. That's like, okay, that's what I like doing because I think that is what the computer does for us. There was a study that was done about the efficiencies of animals. And, you know, what is the most efficient animal as far as locomotion goes? And when they did the test, they found that the most efficient animal was a vulture or a condor.
Really?
Well, they conserve all their energy. They glide. They soar. They don't flap a lot. They really conserve their energy. Humans were way down at the list.
What is the problem?
Then they tested a human on a bicycle. Right to the top of the list. Okay? Computers are a bicycle for the mind. They allow us to do things. I can do, you've heard me talk about podcasting, the radio shows that I do. I'm recording, you know, this class right now to be one of these podcasts. 10 years ago, to do that would have required tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. I'd have had to go to a radio station to get it on the air. Now, from the comfort of my own home office, I actually have listeners on my podcast all over the world. I had a book giveaway a couple months ago, and one of the people who won the book giveaway was in Beijing. Okay, Beijing, China. So it's, you know, if they speak English, they can listen to my podcast. In fact, I have some people who listen to my podcast as a way of learning what the topic is, but also helping them learn how to understand English, which if they can understand my English as fast as I talk, they're doing pretty good. But think of it that way. Share everything you learn here, please. Bring some other people in. Tell them about the class. Tell them about, even if they don't get a chance to come to the class, I'm recording tonight because all this goes up on the Technology IQ blog, and usually tonight sometime I'll get it up there. And we're actually streaming live right now. That's what this microphone is for. it's going out over the internet. So you could sit at your home right now and be listening into this, and actually this chat room is up, and they could be in here chatting, and I can actually take phone calls if I wanted to. And some of the other shows I do, I actually do that. It's more like a talk radio type environment. But afterwards, you can go and you can listen to the whole class. You can start and you can stop it.
And are other classes still on there?
Yes, yes. Everything we've done. I don't think I recorded the first one.
No, you didn't.
But everything from the second through now is up there.
How many have you done, please?
In this, we just recently restarted. I took a hiatus for a while. Things got a little busy. My wife's been getting her PhD, and she had some pretty full days in her classroom schedule. And so, therefore, I was being Mr. Mom again. And so scheduling got a little hassle, but once that finished up, I started to do the classes again. I think we've been doing them for...
Our fifth one, isn't it? Our fifth one?
I think so. It's about a month and a half.
Twice a month.
Now, by the way, I'm going to schedule with Rita, one of the librarians who does the programs and stuff. I'm going to be doing a different program here at the library, just a one-time program on podcasting called Podcasting, the New Radio, the New Television, the New World. And it's going to be dedicated to just showing people what podcasting is.
When are you doing it?
We don't know yet. We're going to schedule it tonight. Yes.
When you do something like that, can you burn a CD and sell it?
Yes. Yes. In fact, I'm working right now with some friends of mine he is a songwriting doctor. He helps people make better songs. And he's been doing it for 30, 40 years. And one of the things we're doing with him is he speaks a lot. To classes, to organizations, and so we're recording some of those sessions, and we won't be selling them on CD, but we'll be selling them as digital downloads directly from the internet.
The next time you have your group of classes, mm-hmm. will it be the same information?
Right now, we're going kind of through these internet services. I wanted a different angle, I wanted to talk about something different. In the previous sessions, we were getting into some really esoteric and hardware problems and stuff like that. It was getting a little difficult to do because if without computers in front of you all, or without someone's got a problem with their computer that's so esoteric that if it isn't here, I can't really do anything about it. So I wanted to find something that would still be very useful, but that had more of the ability to be able to show it here. And like these internet services, I can show, and people can go out to the library and start to use them. They can go home and start to use them. And so that's part of the reason. I may find another topic, and if you have a particular topic, a broad topic, that you would like to explore, let me know. Because, yeah, we can always at some point say, okay, at the end of this month, we're going to end this topic, and we're going to move on to this topic. So, yeah, definitely let me know. I'm more than happy to do that. But keep an eye out for the flyer here for the podcasting session.
How long are your sessions? You started at 6:30?
We 6:30 to 7:45. The library closes at 8 o'clock, and I like to be out, or the librarians will come after me with sticks at 8 o'clock saying, get out.
Contact call here.
Yep, and the classes appear, the audio appears at that website as well. So tonight sometime I'll have this audio put up.
And on a one-to-one I can discuss what you would be as far as instruction goes on a one-to-one basis.
Yes. Yes, I do instruction and troubleshooting and installation of DSL and routers and all that stuff. It's $100 an hour. That's my rate. I've been doing it for over 20 years here in L.A. I've been here in L.A. now 20. I think I've been here longer than I've been in my hometown now, I think. but, yes, you can email me right there, and I'll get right back to you. We have one on the end, and then right back to you. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Well, in fact, with podcasting, one of the things about podcasting is you actually end up with an actual file on your computer, an unencrypted MP3 file that you can do whatever you want with.
So you can burn a disk on that.
Yes.
From that, I should say.
Yes. In fact, before I had before I was given a hand-me-down iPod, this was at the early days of podcasting 2.5 years ago. If I had a long talk I wanted to listen, I'd just burn it to a CD and throw it in the CD player in the car.
Right, because it takes a lot of disk space. Does it not, podcasting?
It can if you're doing lots of shows. Most of the the final product of a podcast is actually fairly small compared to the length of it because they are MP3s and they're compressed down. Most computers nowadays have a big enough hard drive that it's not going to be a problem. And there's also ways, for example, if you're using iTunes to subscribe to podcasts and get them automatically, there's an option in iTunes here where you say, once I've listened to something, get rid of it. And it only keeps the unplayed episodes. And that's the other way of keeping your size requirements down.
Can those download onto readable disks so that you have one week and then you can add the next week and add the next week and add the next week?
The trouble with CD-RWs or DVD-RWs, the rewritable ones, is in most cases you can't easily add information incrementally. You can go in and erase the whole disk and then rewrite it, but to add information incrementally, they're really not. Good idea, very poor execution. And in some cases you can end up with a CD that your machine will read but no one else's will. And so I don't actually use it. I use CDRs, burn once. Well, they're cheap. You buy them in a stack of 50 or 100, and I use them like floppy disks. You know, I just kind of like, well, I got a couple files I want to share. Define, throw them on there here. I may only use the 1% of the disk, but it's just so easy to do to give them to someone.
I want to thank everybody for letting me kind of jump in here. I really appreciated it. The last question I have is, when are you going to be able to show people how to burn CDs? Because I'm not there.
I can give you somewhat of an example here. The issue be it may not be exactly the same way on your computer. But we can. Oh, on a Mac, it's.
I'm leaving.
The Mac? No, I'm a Mac guy myself. What I'm saying, it's easy on a Mac. Basically, you put it in, and there's some questions that ask you when you first insert the disk, and then it's basically just clicking a little burn symbol, and it burns it out. So yeah, drop me an email, and I can actually give you some information on that too.
Thank you again.
Have a great night. Thanks for coming. Come back again.
MacValley.org.
MacValley.org. Yeah, it's the local Valley Mac user group.
Okay, great. Thank you.
They still meet in Northridge?
Yeah.
At the senior center?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Mac operators talk so bad about Dell.
Some people are zealots.
Well, no, I understand. I got one that's more up to date, even better than any Mac PC out to date, which all the stuff you're talking about is automatic follow with my Windows and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
some people are just zealous.
Ask a friend. It even tells you down there, if you don't understand this, right on the ask a friend, invite a neighbor, let him, you know, to both of you guys learn what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Where now the computers are more updated, and I'm already learning. I go, wow, I've learned quite a bit in 2 months, all the things he's talking about. My computer handles it. Thank God.
It's just people are zealots. I mean, I stopped fighting that battle years ago.
That way. I told him that, just get a Mac. He said they're more efficient in the long run than the Dell. So I don't know if something go there.
The way I state it to people is, use whatever makes the most sense to you. I use a Mac because way back at the Mac Plus days, first of all, I was an Apple II person. That was the Apple before the Mac. So I kind of already was connected with Apple. And then the Mac just works the way I work. I use Windows. This is Windows Vista, the latest version of Microsoft Windows. I have to have it. Most of my clients are on Windows, whether it's Windows XP or now more and more Vista. That's why I got this new laptop recently. But so I don't fight the battle. I say whatever works best for you. I will say we had a lot of switchers recently who have moved to the Mac. And what I do to them, for even thinking about it, I say go to the Apple Store and play around. Pick their brains. They will not kick you out. Play with the machines. You can do, the machines are unlocked. You can do anything you could do at home on the machines at the Apple Store. We got one right here in the Fashion Square now. And just go play.
And as far as in his defense, Dell, there's nothing wrong with Dell. Dell's you find it throughout the libraries across the nation.
Oh, no, I'm not just saying that the more professional people that seem to be on the computer.
Have a great night. Thanks for coming.
That if they've been programmed towards the Apple or the Mac, that they favor it.
Well, let me show off one thing, and then I'll answer your question. I don't know if you've seen one of these. If you go to the Apple Store, you can see one. This is my new video iPod.
You don't need
video
to
yeah, the iPod with video is actually its official name.
And I go,
but you can see the video playing on there. And there are video podcasts out there as well.
Okay, Elvis collection.
Otherwise, I don't care.
No, music and video and photos. In fact,
and to make photos.
If you have
and all that, so I can get out.
Now the photos only.
I think they work on
both Windows and Mac, but it uses iPhoto on the Mac to do the photos. I put a few photos on here.
I'm going fishing. What's tomorrow?
Yeah, iPhoto program is just for Mac.
I'm
want to go to Hesperia.
I was just going to ask.
They stock.
I got this at Costco for a few pennies cheaper, about $10 to $15 cheaper. This is a 30 gigabyte model. These are the this is the photo slideshow going on here.
Wow.
So it was, I think, $250. Mm-hmm. You know, out the door with tax and everything, it's about about $270. This is a 30 gigabyte model.
You're not on that there.
Not here, but at home I do. But the iPods work just as well with the Windows as they do with Mac. That's the great thing about it. But I did want to have a chance just to show this to you very quickly. It's a great device. I did not get the big one. There's an 80 gigabyte version you can get. It's about $400. And honestly, I know how much my podcasts take up because it actually shows you when you sync up to your iPod. And I had an older one that's only 10 gigabytes and I wasn't filling it. So this allows me to get, I wanted the video because I'm actually doing some of my own videos, my own video podcasts. And in fact, let me see if it's on here still. There we go. Come on. Let's rewind here. So where is my, come on. There's my happy, this is a video podcast that I did.
Oh, yeah.
And you can that there, and I wanted to be able to have this run. I've actually used it sitting out, waiting for ball games to start and stuff like that. I can still be a little bit productive and watch shows that I want to watch and stuff like that.
Cool. Huh. Download them to that.
Yes. This is basically a hard drive. It's a hard drive with a screen and a little controller. That's what's inside of here. But I just did want to give a chance to you. Had a question, ma'am?
I did. When you were doing the copying a link location.
Yes.
When you went and copied it and cut and paste, basically. But then you said if you knew it, you can just enter.
Just type it in, right?
But you entered the whole shebang. You entered that HTTP thing, and I went, "Oh my gosh."
Well, sometimes I did that in that case because I wasn't sure if Google Reader could deal with not having it or not. Some things can, some things can't. I didn't know with that, so I erred on the side of caution and put it in anyway.
Because even last time or the time before, you said a lot of times we don't even have to put the www in, and then I said, "Oh my God!"
I wasn't in a web browser at that point. I wasn't, typing in the address bar. Uh-huh. I was feeding it to a program, and it was a program I wasn't sure how it was going to deal with it. My guess is you can probably just type in feeds.feedburner.com/. Tech IQ, and it would have taken it. It depends on how they program their system, actually, is what it is. And I erred on the side of caution.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why I did that.
I never would have known to do that.
It would probably even then would have told me, oh, no, you have to type in blah.
Ah, okay.
When you're dealing with an unfamiliar system, it's always best to err on the side of caution. Always better to give it more too much than too little. So in that case, I did do that on purpose.
Yeah. Or kick back through that you got an incorrect address because you're...
Right, it would have choked and it would have said, huh? And then I would have had to type it in, the full way.
I came asking that question about the Google.
I didn't even realize that a change today. I was noticing. Oh, I'm feeling lucky. I never use it. It's really just a quirk feature. Basically, if you type in Welchrite, for example, and you click I feel lucky, it doesn't give you the list of search results. It just takes you to the number one search result it finds.
Right.
Oh.
Basically, you're saying, I feel lucky. That has been there since day one of Google. It's more of a quirky thing than an actual useful tool. So that's what it's about. Yes? Question? Okay. Any other questions this evening? Well, let me. Google to me is if I'm looking for something, I always start there.
Right now, really to get heavy into Google, I just like you say, going through all the different web, the different sites, that and eBay, and a few. That's why I asked you. Okay, some of these different websites. Do they have a book on the different websites? Are there, instead of somebody telling you, reading in a newspaper, check our website. Do they have an informational guide, like the telephone book on different websites?
Years ago, when the web first started, we had a question, do they have like a phone book for the internet?
Yeah.
And the fact is, the minute you print something on paper, it's out of date.
That's true.
And what people found was, Google is the Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
Yahoo is The yellow pages.
That's where I use
them. Yeah, those sites have truly taken over, and the sense of selling a book of links, categorized even, it just didn't make any sense. Yeah, they did. Many of the links would be out of date by the time the book was printed and sold.
Your turn.
Yes, sir.
Is it fairly recent now you can get an email through Google now, Gmail?
Gmail was invite only for about a year or so.
Now it's open.
Now it's totally open. The first class. First class, I made an idiot of myself. No, one of the fun things I was showing off was the fact that anybody could get a Google account tonight. Well, some of the servers hadn't been flipped yet, and so I couldn't do it. You know, went home that night and bang, I got in. It's like, oh, geez. But yeah, now it's open to anyone. Anyone can sign up and get a Gmail account. Yes.
Like you say, the Google, I haven't some. I'm new, so it's clicking out. And some of the PayPal, if you want to set up, send your credit card. I ain't ready for that yet. Like I told you, I went to the school thing, and they said you're the 1 millionth person to visit this website. You want a TV, but then they want you to get something. I said, I haven't won nothing.
Yeah, you got to watch out for the scams.
I got to buy this and this in order. I says, it's a bunch of bunk. Either I want it or I don't.
Yeah, just like in the real world, the internet has people who will try to take advantage of other people. Yes, ma'am. The class flyers are all gone, but they may have some at the reference desk. But that one, I will always announce the classes there on the Tech IQ blog.
Okay.
And you can always find the information there.
Yeah.
And in fact, there will be a new flyer coming out that has the new dates for like the next 6 months on it. I do need to update that because I think we're coming to the end of our dates I had on the sheet. Just a little heads up, I do know there's the first meeting in July. I didn't realize it, but I'm going to be out of town I'm going to be doing podcasting seminars. So I will have to talk with Rita and, you know, cancel that class. I think it's the 11th. It's the second week of July, whatever Thursday that is. But just to let you know, I just figured that out. Here, April, May, June, July, 12th. It's the 12th. We'll probably be canceled. I'm supposed to be in Missouri.
Okay.
At that time, so.
Truman's old state.
Yes, the Show Me State.
A million mosquitoes. Made the mistake of camping by water.
Oh boy!
Woke up in the morning, my head was like the size of this. But you know, we went off through camping and that. A friend and I went around the lakes and everything. Wound up in Missouri and all that. Awesome.
Okay, thank you very much for coming. If you have any further questions, please feel free to email me. There's the email address on the flyer, I believe, as well. For those of you who've been listening online, this is Technology IQ with Douglas E. Welch. Tonight we were live from the library. The second and fourth Thursdays of every month, you can find us here live on TalkShoe.com. For more information, visit our website, welchwrite.com/techIQ. That's welchwrite.com/techIQ. Remember, control your technology, don't let it control you.